Is there a shift in the oil spill blame game?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States. The presidential panel investigating the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico says British oil giant BP may not totally be to blame. The panel's chief investigator claims Halliburton, which contracted to build the oil rig that exploded and caused the spill, didn't clearly inform BP the cement mix it used on the well was unstable. Overseas today, investors have been buying BP shares as a result. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us live from London to talk about it. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So why do investors seem to think that this is good news for BP?
Because it's the first real sign that BP may not be solely to blame for the disaster. Here's Nick McGregor, an oil analyst with brokers Redmayne Bentley.
Well, this is the first independent confirmation we've had of BP's view that some of the contractors involved shared liability for the chain of events that led up to the blowout in the Gulf of Mexico. And financially, this may well mean that they are now able to involve those parties in paying the bill for all of this.
But BP is certainly not off the hook. The U.S. Commission's chief investigator claims that BP was also aware the cement used on the well was unstable.
And what about Halliburton? How does this affect Halliburton?
Well, the share price plunged yesterday. That speaks for itself. Halliburton has issued a statement repeating its claim that the well design caused the blowout, not the cement job, although it also acknowledged that it didn't test the final cement mix after BP made a last-minute change to the mix. These are, of course, still early days, Steve. The US Commission doesn't report until next year. We will no doubt hear a lot more wrangling between BP and its contractors over who did what and when.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London this morning. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
British Airways reported a profit today for the first time in a couple of years. Airlines were particularly hard hit during the recession, as we all know. But as the BBC's Rebecca Singer reports, it looks like business travelers are back and giving the airlines a lift.
On a plane flight, the real money comes from the business and first-class cabins. And when companies tighten their purse strings during the recession, business travel fell dramatically. Willie Walsh is the chief executive of British Airways. He says the company has suffered 2 years of monster losses, but that major cost-cutting and great staff had turned things around.
To get the business back into profitability has been a very, very hard job, and I think everybody at BA deserves great credit.
Walsh says the great results aren't just impressive in the face of the economic downturn. The airline's also been dealing with a labour dispute with cabin crew, which resulted in several days of strikes. And don't forget the Icelandic volcanic ash cloud, which stopped flights across Europe back in the spring. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
Global stocks are lower at the moment. Ahead of third quarter American GDP, which is out later this morning, global investors are bracing for a little disappointment. Markets are down in Europe and Asia. And that's despite profits surging at Japanese car makers Honda and Mazda and electronics makers Sony and Panasonic. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow gave back 12 points to close at 11,113.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. By Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio. And by the Wall Street Journal Weekend, offering 4 sections of ideas and information, available at newsstands every Saturday.
This weekend in the NFL, the Broncos take on the 49ers, but neither team will have a home field advantage. The game is going to be played in London. And that got our Freakonomics correspondent Stephen Dubner thinking. Welcome to the Marketplace Morning Report, Dubner.
Good morning, Chiatakis.
All right, so the Broncos 49ers game, even though it's being played in London, will be played exactly the same as it is here, right?
One key difference, you'll see more advertising on the field than the NFL typically allows here. But they take it a step further. They put big, fat corporate logos right over the heart on the players' jerseys. And it got me to thinking, why doesn't the NFL allow that?
You know, I've wondered about that too, Stephen. The NFL isn't shy about putting corporate names on stadiums, as we know. Would jersey ads be less valuable in the United States than in, say, Europe?
I don't think so. The top teams in Europe average about $17 million a year for the jersey sponsorship. I talked to some smart folks here. They estimated it might be worth about the same. So why pass that up? Why leave that money on the table? So I asked that to Joe Ellis, who's the chief operating officer of the Denver Broncos. And his answer is essentially tradition. But he also has this to say.
I will tell you that if you did do it, people would get over it very quickly and would accept it very quickly.
In fact, this season, for the first time, the NFL allowed teams to put paid sponsorship on their practice jerseys.
So then what's stopping this from happening?
The NFL doesn't want to cannibalize revenue from existing streams. The other thing is that the corporate sponsorship landscape is complicated. I talked to Keith Gordon from the marketing arm of the NFL Players Association, and he makes the important point that big-time players already have their own sponsorship deals.
If an NFL player has a sponsor logo on his jersey, it could simply prevent him from actually acquiring another deal with, let's say, another competitor.
So, Steve, you've seen Peyton Manning on all those TV ads for Sony. What if his team now, the Indianapolis Colts, what if they start wearing Panasonic jerseys? Mm. Now, all of a sudden, if I'm Peyton, I don't look like such an ideal Sony sponsor anymore. And it seems to look like the money that might flow directly to me is now being spread among my 52 teammates, kind of robbing Peyton to pay Paul and everybody else. And then there's the issue of how that money would get split between the players and the teams. The league and the players' union are not on the best of terms right now. There's a lockout pending for March. So they're not so likely to see eye to eye on something like splitting this kind of new dough.
Stephen Dubner, Freakonomics correspondent, thanks.
My pleasure. Thanks, Steve.
Check out FreakonomicsRadio.com to check out more stories or download the podcast. And finally, in Baltimore, the first repeat offender citation has gone out for a restaurant that's violated the city's ban on trans fat in food. The city's health department has issued dozens of warnings, but no one's gotten the $100 fine until now. And the restaurant that got it for its unhealthy margarine? The Healthy Choice Cafe. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
During the November sweeps, television writers lay it all on the line. They write episodes that change everything. Not the kind of pressure people miss, right?
It does, however, make me fondly reminisce about my time in the trenches. And by fondly reminisce, I mean wake up in the middle of the night screaming.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. You know, it ain't easy writing for TV. The story next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.